Hello, and thanks for being with us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, everyone. Hello, Nitza Mazoz. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the evolvement of Judaism that's been around for thousands of years. Over time, the Jewish people went through many different states. This is what we'd like to take a deeper look into. Be with us. It's going to be really interesting. Nitza, please. Yeah, on our previous show, we talked about how the Jewish nation, the Israeli nation, was formed, about Abraham's awakening with his revolutionary perception of monotheism, the belief in one God instead of many gods, which was very common back then in those pagan times. And we'd like to take a step forward and reach the state of Mount Sinai. Mount Sinai is a state where the people of Israel go through a certain process that we'll talk about in a moment, after they have discovered that there is a certain force that if they pray to or work correctly between them and find the force to overcome the quarrels, the fights, the hatred that's revealed between them, they reach a certain state called Mount Sinai, where they receive laws from the Creator. Let's try and understand, what does that mean? That nation that has realized the method that they have received from Abraham, they go through a certain process and reach the state of Mount Sinai, where they, how to call it, make a covenant with God. Doesn't matter how you call it. So what does it really mean? It means that now, in the so-called state of Mount Sinai, they have a different way to handle, to deal with the evil inclination, the evil force that's revealed. Very different. Because if previously they simply connected between them, and a simple connection between them was enough, the evil between them became revealed on a higher and higher degree, up to the point where it's called the times of Pharaoh. And it doesn't matter if they were or weren't in Egypt, it's the relations between them, in each of them in particular, and in the relations between them, that is revealed as the force of evil that separates them, that twists them this way, that pushes them against each other and so on. And still, they could overcome it. So, at the end of the period of Pharaoh, they felt that they can no longer do it. They're no longer capable of being under the rule of Pharaoh, under the rule of the evil. The evil grew so much that the entire method of Abraham that they have received from him, it stopped working. It simply doesn't have the force to help them come closer and unite and exist correctly, so that the good force will dwell between them, among them. They wanted to bow to the force of good, connection, love. By it, they wanted to feel the wholeness and perfection of the existence of nature that entirely works that way. And they couldn't. And therefore, they have reached a state where they forcefully disconnected themselves from that evil inclination, and they have reached a state where they're willing to bow to the force of good, the force of connection. This means that they're at the bottom of Mount Sinai, that the hatred's above them, but they bow to the force of connection, the good force of nature, and they ask, they demand, they beg to receive this good force for each of them to find inner balance, to become internally balanced and balanced with others. Otherwise, they were really prepared to eat each other. And they have received this method of how, upon this ever-growing evil desire, how can they get along and connect between them, and each with himself and with others by the force of good, of love and bestowal. And this means that they have received the Torah, meaning that they have received a continuation to Abraham's method, that it's also the same method called love covers for all crimes and love another as thyself. But now they started better acknowledging the force of good that exists between them when they connect. And then Abraham no longer exists between them, but it's Moses. And Moses connects them into tens, hundreds, thousands, for it to be easier for them to work with each other in particular and with themselves. And this is how he connects the nation, meaning that entire group becomes a nation. As it says, today you have become a nation. And this way they had to exist. The 40 years in the desert is their ascent from the egoistic desire, where they really had very serious fights with one another until they gradually correct themselves and are prepared and willing to be in an altruistic connection between them, meaning to adapt themselves in such a way that the force of good will control them and dwell among them upon the force of evil. Not that the evil force goes away, but love covers for all crimes upon the evil force, according to what Abraham said. And then, out of these two forces, they start building a building of their connection, of their good connection, where there is both the bad and also the good, and out of these two forces, the plus and the minus that exist in nature, on the human level, they start building their relations, and this means that they build the temple, Beit HaMikdash in Hebrew, literally meaning a house of holiness, holiness meaning mutual love, mutual bestowal between them. And this is how we go into the third period already. I want to ask about the nation. The nation was in a certain inner state where they really acknowledged the evil, the bad force controlling them, meaning they were in a certain state where they could demand this good force. First of all, they had to acknowledge that the evil force in them, it's what? It's destructive. It's what did they actually acknowledge internally wise? That it's killing them. That this evil force is killing them. This is what they discovered. So much so. It's like with a disease. There are such cases or people that don't feel it. There are those that feel more, and there are those that feel more. They've advanced so much since Babylon that in this evil force, they truly started identifying the angel of death. I want to understand, what's the difference between the way Judaism was in the times of Abraham and the way it was in the times of Moses? Essentially, what's the difference? That in the times of Abraham, it was the building of the group, building it out of those Babylonians that were still running away from the quarrels, the fights that they had back in Babylon, and that they discovered the good force that affected them in general, worked on them in general, on the connection that they tried to realize every time. Whereas when the force of Pharaoh began to reveal between them, the bad force between all of them, that dwelled upon all of them, against it, through their efforts, they started discovering the force of good, that now opposite the bad force was more detailed and various, and they started discovering one opposite the other, that there are these two forces that exist. And what they discovered was that the evil force is controlling them compared with the good force that they've revealed now, and they wanted for it to control them a bit too. But Pharaoh didn't allow that. And so they understood that, first of all, they have to disconnect from the bad force. And only on this condition will they be able to approach the force of good. And when they will receive the force of good, then they will be able to deal, cope with that evil force that will also be revealed, but they have to have both in their hands. Whereas when they're under the influence of the evil force, they can't reveal the force of good. The evil force simply doesn't allow it. And therefore, what they needed was, as it says, as an allegory, to run away from Egypt. So if I look at the students around Abraham, Judaism in the times of Abraham versus the Jews in the times of Moses, then it's possible to say that the Jews in the times of Moses reveal among them an egoistic negative force that, as you previously put it, a much greater evil inclination, greater than that of the Babylonians that stayed there, or you mean in general than all the nations? No, I'm even saying, if I look at the Jews themselves, Abraham's first students, out of which later the nation of Israel was formed. Suppose I relate to them as the first Jews. Then afterwards, around Moses, there are Jews too. So those Jews versus these Jews, the Jews around Moses, they're much worse, much more egoistic, truly terrible, willing to sell everything to Pharaoh. And accordingly, what does Moses teach them that Abraham didn't? That nonetheless, they have to connect. Yeah, but Abraham also talked to them about connection. Right, but Abraham, on this new degree where the ego grew immensely, this force can no longer teach them. There has to be a much more cunning teacher. Why? Because the force that's working inside the person is more cunning, it's stronger, it's more sophisticated. So Moses' Judaism is more sophisticated, cunning than Abraham's? Of course. How? How can we be in some kind of connection between us, keep our connection, even though that we are under the exile of Pharaoh, the control of Pharaoh, the much more powerful evil force, and it really controls them. And along with it, we are still somewhat connected between us without losing the form of our nation that Abraham has as if instilled in us. Yeah, but gradually, it's falling apart. Yeah. Now, regarding the disconnection, you said that Moses teaches them that the evil force controls all of them so much and also their relations, that first of all, there has to be disconnection. The act of disconnecting, it's something that Abraham didn't have to do. Abraham only disconnected them from Babylon and Nimrod. That means what? From the evil. So what's new about this disconnection that Abraham teaches them? There, the disconnection was in order to reveal the force of good, because otherwise it was impossible to reveal it. Because Abraham, he disconnected them from Babylon and connected them in order to start revealing in them the force of good. That it's possible to distinguish between the good and the bad, that there is another force in nature. And Moses' disconnection, it was in practice how to completely disconnect from the evil in order to relate ourselves to the force of good. And this is possible only on condition that we agree to being zero, to being nothing, and that we'll have nothing. We just want one thing, to be under the control of the force of good. Don't promise me anything, I don't want it. And don't tell me anything. I'll be content with just being under you. What will I have as a result? Nothing. And I also don't want anything. Nothing. Just don't forsake me. This is what man turns to the good force with. It's the condition for the reception of the Torah and the state of Mount Sinai. What's different about the nation before and after the reception of the Torah, the giving of the Torah? What was added? The thing added was the knowledge and the means. The knowledge is that there is the force of good that I can draw on this degree where my ego is so big. The ego is growing all the time. And now I know how to connect to the force of good and invite, draw it. And that I myself am incapable of doing anything good. And then it becomes the Elohim, meaning that it rules. And then I also start understanding that that Elohim includes also Pharaoh inside it, includes my evil inclination inside it, that it all exists in the one force, that there are no two forces in nature, plus and minus, but that there's one force, that this is how it plays with me, through plus and minus, at times through a smiling face, at times through a grave one, so to speak, in order to teach me how to get to know him and become his partner. This is a very great and important degree of the recognition of nature, of the Creator. So this is actually what the nation has achieved in that state? Yes. So, first of all, they've acknowledged that there is an evil force in them, that they have to draw the good force, and then after the reception of the Torah, they felt that there is one force that's good and only. And what a person perceives as something bad, it just shows me where I still don't understand it or him. I wanted to ask, you just mentioned that in the state of Mount Sinai, the nation reveals the Creator. It says that they made a covenant. There was a covenant made between the people, the nation, and the Creator. Now, Abraham, he also had a covenant with the Creator. What's the difference between the covenant that Abraham made with the Creator and the covenant that is now made between the nation and the Creator in the state of Mount Sinai? We have four covenants because all of us are included of 4 degrees of coarseness, of yud. Of what? 4 degrees of egoistic desire. And therefore, for each and every desire, I need a special connection with the upper force. This connection is called a covenant. So I have to determine 4 covenants on my path of development. And this is what happened since the times of Abraham, where it was Sarah that did it. And until those times where they're already in the times of Moses and so on. A covenant is a kind of agreement between two sides. Yeah. What does Abraham agree on with the Creator as opposed to what later on the people of Israel agree on with the Creator in the state of Mount Sinai? What Abraham agrees on with the Creator is to be in a general kind of connection with him, called Sarah. That's called Sarah? Yeah? Sarah? How's that related? It's Abraham's will to receive. Okay, look, I can't get into all the details here. I'm limited by the time we have. So again, what does Abraham agree on with God in his covenant? How can he be connected to that positive upper force in his desire? Okay, this is on part of Abraham. What does God promise him in return? God or the Creator tells him, don't worry, everything's going to be fine. Keep going in the direction I showed you. And what does Abraham promise that he'll do? That he will build, this is why he's called the father of the nation, Avraham, that he will build such a nation, such a group, that will over time become an entire, complete nation, meaning from a group of distant, unrelated strangers to a group or nation that are connected nonetheless by ties of love. Okay, jumping to the covenant that the people of Israel made with the Creator in the state of Mount Sinai, what did the people of Israel promise and what does the Creator promise? In the state of Mount Sinai, the people of Israel promise to the upper force that they want, they can't promise anything because They came out from under the control of the evil, and they have nothing from the good. They just don't want to remain under the control of the evil. They don't want to go back to Pharaoh or to Egypt, this one thing. And they want for the upper force to give them every time more and more gradually the force of good, the force of love, the force of connection. Meaning not that the upper force will give them his own force of love, but for the upper force to build in man the force of love towards others. Just like the Creator loves the other, loves mankind, and wants to bestow good and abundance onto them, then the people of Israel now, under Mount Sinai, say, we don't want anything besides receiving this force of yours from you to be able to love each other and everyone else. And what does the Creator promise on his part? He says, if you will be able to overcome the disturbances that I send you, then it'll happen. What do you need the disturbances for? In order for you to be able to hold on to the good force against the evil force, otherwise you won't be able to hold on to it. So what does the Creator promise? That he'll send them the bad force, and upon that, they'll ask and he'll give them the good force. And this way, step by step by step, throughout the 40 years in the desert, as we see. Another question. The Ten Commandments. There are different perceptions that say that, on the one hand, we relate to the Ten Commandments as the basis for human morality. This is one perception, mainly supported by Jews. On the other hand, there are many perceptions that say, look, other nations, much more ancient nations, had morals long before the Ten Commandments were given to the people of Israel. Now, we're not historians, we're not going to argue about these things, but the way you see it, what are the Ten Commandments, and what did they innovate in human culture altogether? First of all, these Ten Commandments, depending on how you call them, but they were not given to mankind. No? No, not to keep. They were given to the people of Israel. They were given to the people of Israel to keep, to realize, in order to keep the right kind of connection between everyone. And only for this purpose. Meaning these are rules and laws that were made especially for the Jewish people in order for them to be able to unite. And these are the rules that are supposed to guide them. Yeah, to guide them towards what? Towards what? Connection. Connection meaning what? That they'll be as one man and one heart. If you want to connect in a group as one man and one heart, then you need a 10, like the Ten Commandments, and to realize these laws inside the 10. A 10 meaning what? 10 people. The Ten Commandments are divided into the first 5 and the second 5. Between man and the Creator, man and his friend, there are 2 different kinds of interactions between man and God and between man and man. What's the difference between these 2 kinds of interactions? How are they related to the right connection between everyone? They're all directed at their connection, the connection between them, and from the connection between them to the connection with the general force that dwells among them. What's the relation between the connection of man and man and the connection of man and God, the Creator? One and the same. What do you mean? Because in each and every one, you have to see that it's the Creator standing in front of you. What do you mean? What I just said? Love another as thyself. Love the Creator, your God. Love another as thyself is between man and man, and love the Creator, your God, is between man and God. They have to be the same. This is what I'm asking, so if you can explain. I'm showing you that these are 2 different things. I'm telling you that it's not. And also the Ten Commandments, These are the conditions for connection between everyone and everyone. That to the extent to which we keep them, we realize we keep our connection with the Creator, with the force of good, the force of connection, the force of love, and He is revealed among us, between us. Between us meaning what? Previously you said that the evil force is revealed inside of man, and he also has to reveal the force of good inside of him. When you say between us, what realm is that in? Between us? Between human beings? Yes. The Creator exists between the people? Yes. He also exists inside the hearts of people? Yes. Where then? Inside the one heart that includes everyone. What is that? Because if man wants to connect with others, he doesn't have anything inside himself. Everything is outside of him, between him and others. And his attitude towards others? Yeah? So meaning the good force, and when I think about it, also the bad force, it's not something abstract between man and himself, but it's in relation to his bad attitude towards others and in relation to his good attitude towards others. And therefore, when you're saying that the Creator exists between us, then what do you mean? In our relations, in the feelings between us, there's either the bad or the good force. And previously you said that both of them are like two sides of the same coin. Yeah? Last question. So what does it mean to be the people of God? To keep the law of love between us. Because the Creator is love. So previously you said that the Creator promises them that I will awaken more and more bad things between you so that upon them you will reveal me more and more up to the point of unconditional love. So the people of God, and this is something that we'll talk about on our future shows, it's a people that from this point and on are going to reveal lots of hate, ego, and so on between them. Yeah, and this is the platform upon which they will reveal the good force of the Creator. Yeah. Dr. Leitman, thank you very much. Thank you, Nitsa. Thank you for being with us. Till next time, all the best.